It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to the RTC Weekly Download, where we feature great old-time radio every week for your enjoyment. This week we're going to have an episode of the Black Museum, the Green Hornet, and the Great Gildersleeve. We'll start off with the Black Museum, so there's a little crime involved here, and the story will be told by none other than Orson Welles himself, the hero of the 30s and 40s. So here we go with Kilroy Was Here.
This is Orson Welles, speaking from London. The Black Museum, it's a repository of death. Here in the grimy stone structure on the Thames, which houses Scotland Yard, is a warehouse of homicide, where everyday objects, a phonograph record, a postcard, a color photograph, a simple statuette, all are touched by murder. Here's two scribbled notes, bits of paper with three words scrawled across them. Slogan known around the world, a slogan you recognize, words created in the kind of lonely fun men far from home, men at war, have enjoyed through all of history.
What's it mean, Inspector?
It would be nice to know, Sergeant. I suspect that if we did know, we'd have the answer to this nasty business.
Well, this killer, sir, it's possible he's an American. That phrase was American, sir, all through the war. Kilroy was here.
Kilroy was here. And he's still here. In the Black Museum.
From the annals of the Criminal Investigation Department of the London Police, we bring you the dramatic stories of the crimes recorded by the objects in Scotland Yard's Gallery of Death, the Black Museum.
Here we are in the Black Museum. Scotland Yard's Museum of Murder. Here's a typewriter. Your secretary uses one. Perhaps your son or daughter write their school essays on a machine like this. This one is used to write a letter. That letter brought a woman to an address and death to the author of that letter.
Here are the notes.
Scrawled on line paper such as children use, children who are just learning to write. And a photograph showing the same three words scratched on a wooden surface. 3 times 3 was a number in witchcraft in ancient times. 3 times 3 words were written. This wasn't witchcraft. Merely murder. Began for Inspector Liggett and Sergeant Porter in the usual manner. The telephone rang in the inspector's office at the yard.
Inspector Liggett here.
Sergeant Garth, 11th District Metropolitan Police, sir. We're at the Royal Roost, sir. Private Supper Club, 15 Marley Court. The proprietor, Matt Bolton, has been shot and killed, Inspector.
Very well, we'll be right along. Well, so Matt Bolton has finally departed this earth, Porter.
In the expected manner?
In the expected manner.
You wouldn't know Matt Bolton. 99 chances out of 100, you never heard of him. But enough people had heard of him to net Matt Bolton a neat six-figure income from various protective associations and entertainment enterprises, such as the Royal Roost, one of those small private supper clubs, manages to keep its license by operating just within the law. The club was easy to find. In place of a neon sign, there was a police constable at the door.
Yeah, it looks like it's this way, I think.
Stuffy in here, Inspector?
It always is in these places. Apparently, a good many people prefer to amuse themselves breathing a combination of tobacco and poor liquor fumes rather than good fresh air.
Quite a costume on those girls.
The roosters in the Royal Rooster. Get it, Sergeant?
I've never seen a rooster with so little on besides tail feathers.
Neither have I. Look, we better get to work, Sergeant.
The two policemen crossed the nightclub, skirted the dance floor, and quietly passed through the doorway near the bandstand. To their left, another door stood open, revealing a cubicle complete with mirror lights, another girlish rooster, a man, and a body. A body full length on the floor. The girl was saying,
"Look, we simply can't send the chorus out once more. Do I get to do my act, or don't I?"
"I'm Inspector Liggett, Sergeant. The young lady may do her act. I doubt if she'll try to go outside the club in that costume."
"Well, thank you, Inspector. First this man said he thought the show ought to go on so the customers wouldn't be disturbed, and then he held me here. Oh, look, that's my cue. I'll be back. Don't worry, I'm not going anyplace. You're so right about that, Inspector."
"Knows her way around, that girl, sir. Found the body, didn't turn her hair."
"So I notice. Find the weapon, Sergeant?"
"No, sir, not in here.
Porter, check the exits."
"Very good, sir."
"Oh, we've done that, sir. Only two, the way you came and the back door, fire exit. No one in the kitchen saw or heard anything. We haven't touched the body. Waited for you and the medical examiner, sir."
Very good. All right. Turn out his pockets, Porter."
"Yes, sir. Here's something, Inspector. Tucked in his breast pocket."
"Quite a touch. I take it you didn't see this, Garth?"
"No, sir. We left the body strictly as it was."
"Odd. Almost a signature. It's a note. Kilroy was here."
For a moment, memories of other days crowded into the tiny dressing room. A phrase which had meant chuckles once seemed incongruous in that atmosphere of violent death. And then Mabel was back with boyfriend.
"May I inquire who your escort is, Miss Martin?"
"Larry King, meet Scotland Yard."
"Gentlemen."
"How do you do? Is this your usual practice, Mr. King?"
"If you mean escorting Miss Martin home, that's correct."
"You are good friends?"
"We're engaged."
"I see. Miss Martin, before you leave us to get dressed, during your employment here, have you ever had any trouble with Mr. Bolton?"
"Do you mean, did he make advances?"
"Yes."
"Well, naturally."
"I see. Mr. King, did you know about these advances?"
"I did."
"Did you ever have any trouble with Mr. Bolton?"
"Nothing to speak of."
"Of course, it never is anything to speak of. You served during the recent war."
"I did. 8th Army. All the way from Tobruk to northern Italy."
"Does the expression, Kilroy was here, mean anything to you?"
"The Americans, 5th Army, they used it. I've seen it many times."
"Very well. Leave your addresses, both of you, with Sergeant Garth here. And don't leave the city. We may need you. That's all for now."
Now the routine begins. Inspector Liggett and Sergeant Porter return to the yard. The orders go out.
"Have them run a complete check on Bolton's pals. They'll all have alibis, but run the check anyway."
That was a start. Now the patient waiting, putting together the few facts available. It's the hardest part of police work anywhere.
"So, Porter, no prints on that note except yours and mine."
"Correct, Inspector."
"What have you got on King and the girl?"
"She's, remarkably respectable."
"Nothing remarkable, Sergeant. What about him?"
"He's a lawyer in the city. Rather successful. Good reputation."
"Ever crossed Bolton's path in his work?"
"Nope. He's a copyright lawyer. Deals with writers, mostly."
"Nothing there, then."
Takes patience. Lots of it. Check and recheck. Wait for information. Wait for the telephone to ring.
"Inspector Liggett here."
"Detective Ashton, sir. 23rd District."
Go ahead, Ashton.
"At 14 and a half Haven Mew, sir. We've been watching the place, sir. That King fella lives there."
"Yes, I know."
"The superintendent's wife has been found, sir, on the cellar steps, strangled. We found the note in her apron pocket. Kilroy was here, it says."
Wait for the telephone to ring, and when it does ring, another death, another note. No solution. Merely complication piled on complication. A short while later, in the basement apartment of the newly widowed janitor.
You found her yourself, Mr. Evans?
Yes, sir. Lying there, she was on the cellar steps. I was going down to look at the oil burner.
I see. Now, your wife have any enemies, Mr. Evans?
No, sir, no. Where would the likes of us come in, having enemies? Quarrelsome a little, you might say. But what woman isn't?
Oh, she quarreled with you?
With me, mostly. Not that I could blame her. It's hard work, a place like this, you know. Once in a while with a tenant. The children in 4B, for instance, they write on the walls. So my wife argues with the mother.
Mm-hmm.
The nice young man in 6G lets the bathtub run over. 5G complains. My wife scolds Mr. King.
I see, yes. Now, is Mr. King at home now?
Oh, I believe so, sir.
All right. Thank you. We'll do our best to find whoever killed your wife, Mr. Evans.
Oh, thank you, sir. She had a temper, I know, but she never did no real harm.
Up in the self-service elevator on the sixth floor. Find 6G and ring the bell. Have it opened, not by Larry King, but by Mabel Martin. Far more fully dressed than the last time the inspector saw her.
Well, Miss Martin, collected the insurance yet?
Cut it out, Inspector. I don't have to stand for that sort of thing. In fact, I could ask you for a warrant before I let you in here.
But you won't, will you, Mr. King?
Ask your questions. They're about Mrs. Evans, I assume.
Oh, Larry, please.
Don't worry, darling. Ask your questions, Inspector.
You quarreled with Mrs. Evans.
I did. I wanted my bathtub fixed. The drain was backing up. She told me to go to fix it myself, that's all.
You're sure that was all? Murder seems to have a way of happening in your vicinity, King.
Is that an accusation?
What's all this to do with Matt Bolton?
I don't know. But there is a link. Quite a clear link, Miss Martin. You see, on Mrs. Evans, we found a bit of paper. And on it was scrawled, Kilroy was here. Any ideas on that, ex-soldier, now Solicitor King?
Solicitor King had nothing to say. His puzzlement, his lack of knowledge, seemed honest enough. Inspector Liggett drew no conclusions. He waited. The routine continued. The reports came in.
The Martingale is a new job. Same type of club. I've seen the act, Inspector. Same songs. More clothes.
Nothing on Bolton's cronies. Every one of them has an alibi.
Yes. King seems to follow a set routine, Inspector. To the office, back home, dinner, then calls for the girl. Even eats his lunch at the same time every day in the same restaurant.
Nothing much to go on there, just a time of waiting. A week passed. Telephone rang once again.
Inspector Liggett here.
Detective Ashton, sir. We've another one for you.
What?
Yes, sir. A butcher this time. Name of Andrews. 2 blocks from the apartment house where King lives. Head bashed in with his own mallet. Scratched on the chopping block with one of his own knives is the same old message, sir. Kilroy was here.
Kilroy was here. Familiar words with a smile in their words to remember fondly. 3 times they appear. On a butcher's block, on scraps of paper, and today, they can be seen in the Black Museum. A third killing, and signed exactly the same way. Kilroy was here. More, this murder had taken place within a few blocks of 14 and a half Haven Mews, where Larry King lived. The same young man who was the secret fiancé of the singer, and whose dressing room the first body had been found. The same young man who lived in the house where the janitor's wife had been strangled. Inspector Liggett lost no time reaching the scene of the latest crime.
Ashton. Yes, sir?
Anything fresh?
Just the things I reported, sir. There's the mallet, the weapon.
Yeah.
The message was scratched with this knife.
Any prints?
The laboratory crew are trying to raise some. Nothing yet.
Very well. Who's the woman?
The widow.
Mrs. Andrews. I,
I really dislike bothering you with questions at this time, but you understand that speed may be the essence now.
Yes. Yes, of course, Inspector.
I understand that it was you who found your husband.
Yes. I stopped here to get some money for a dress. It'll have to be a black one now.
Did you always come to him for that kind of money?
Well, Jim had his ways. He was considerably older than I am. He seemed just strong when we first married. Well, later he was... Well, it changed to domineering.
I understand, but now look, just a few more questions, please. Does the phrase on the chopping block mean anything to you?
Kilroy was here? No. No, it's... Well, it's just a... Well, I think I heard it on the radio once or twice.
From the way you describe your husband, I'd say he was rather, well, positive.
A mild way of putting it. Positive. Domineering, a man who brooked no argument. As the questions went on, the picture became more clear of a large, almost brutish man who covered his deficiencies with bluster and bullying. Finally...
Just one more point, Mrs. Andrews. Did your husband ever argue with his customers? I mean, did he make any enemies among them?
Well, some. Only over little things.
Can you give me a specific instance?
Well, last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was last week. A nice young man said Jim was overcharging him. They had words. The man, whose name is Larry King, from the apartment house on Haven Mews, he swore he'd never buy here again.
I see.
Have I helped, Inspector?
You may have. Just a little time will tell, I suspect. Just a little time.
A little time. Within the hour, Larry King was in custody, taken in charge for 24 hours on suspicion of complicity. His fingerprints revealed...
nothing.
His answers to the barrage of questions revealed...
nothing.
Wearily, the inspector and Sergeant Porter returned to the office to face unrelated facts and a no-progress report. Wearily, the inspector picked up the receiver of his office intercom.
Yes, Sergeant?
You have a caller, sir.
Who is it?
Miss Mabel Martin, sir. She insists on speaking with you.
Miss Martin was ushered in, seated in front of the desk.
I've got something to tell you, Inspector.
Please do.
Well, Larry didn't kill anybody.
Didn't he?
No. I did.
Steady, Sergeant. Please take down Miss Martin's statement. Now, I must warn you, Miss Martin, anything you say will be taken down in writing and may be used in evidence.
Yes, I understand.
Now the floodgates opened.
I killed all three of them and left the notes to make it look as though Larry did it.
So simple, so obvious.
Matt Bolton threatened me. He said if I didn't come back to him, he'd change his insurance policies and tell Larry about us. Well, I shot him. It was a .22 that Larry had given me.
One death accounted for. The policeman listened gravely.
Mrs. Evans was always snooping. She threatened to tell Larry about Matt and me. I did it in the cellar, behind the coal pile. I strangled her.
Quite logical. The inspector waited.
Andrews, the butcher, I used to shop there for Larry. Andrews made some advances. He reached for me and I grabbed a meat cleaver. Then I scratched the note on the wood. That's the story, Inspector.
Yes. Tell me, how much do you weigh, Miss Martin?
About 107 pounds. Why, what's that got to do with...
Sergeant Porter, what was the caliber of the bullet found in Matt Bolton?
.38 caliber, sir.
Thank you. And did you notice a coal pile in the cellar at 14 and a half Haven Mews?
It's an oil burner, sir. Quite modern.
Thank you. And the weapon in the Andrews case?
A mallet, sir. Not a cleaver. A mallet.
And, Sergeant, can you picture a young woman of 107 pounds knocking out and killing a man of Andrew's size?
Not very well, sir.
Of course, it's obvious. Her heart and her courage are as large as she is, if not larger, but...
All right, have your fun. I've made a fool of myself, but Larry didn't kill anyone. I know that. I know it. You can't do this to him.
Look. I wouldn't worry, Miss Martin, if I were you. In fact, if I were you, I'd hurry out to the front of the building. Mr. King is about to be released, and I think you'll want to meet him there. Won't you?
Oh, Inspector. Oh, Sergeant, I... Oh, forgive me, please.
How about it, Porter? Care to have a girl like that to marry?
Yes, sir. For more reasons than one. Where are we now, sir?
Offhand, Porter, I'd say we were just about where we were when we first heard of the Andrews killing. Put on your thinking cap, Sergeant. This is quite a problem.
They sat there in silence. Their minds sifted fact after fact. And once they'd been through the meager supply of facts on hand, they started over again. At one point, the inspector said, half to himself,
"There's something we're overlooking. Probably quite a simple point. It usually is, but..."
He was quite right. In fact, the inspector was quite appalled, so appalled. He spoke in what amounted to a whisper.
"Sergeant, hand me that telephone directory, please."
"What? Oh, yeah, yes, sir." "Can I help you, sir?"
No, thank you. Just get your hat, Sergeant.
Get my
hat? Yes, we're going back to 14 and a half Haven Mews.
That's King's address.
Yes, and according to the directory, it is also the residence of one Joseph Kilroy, one of the 7 Kilroys listed in the London telephone directory.
Doesn't take long from Scotland Yard to Haven Mews. Not when you travel by police car with a siren going. It doesn't take long to race upstairs to a third floor apartment. Ring the doorbell.
"Come in, gentlemen. I heard your arrival in the street. What took you so long, gentlemen?" No, really, no.
Mr. Kilroy, I must warn you, anything you say...
"Oh, that's all right. I understand. Don't mind in the least."
"Well, I'll be..."
"Watch him, Sergeant."
"I am, sir."
"Frankly..."
Liggett. Inspector Liggett.
"Oh, yes, thank you. Frankly, Inspector, I'm rather annoyed with you. Here I go to all the trouble of killing a man so that nice young fellow in 6G could marry that cute little baggage he's going with. And you arrest him instead of me."
"I see. I'm sorry about that, too, sir. So you killed Bolton?"
"Saw him one night treating the girl really nastily. Front of this house."
"If I may ask, why the woman?"
"Oh, she was a nagger. Really annoying. And after I killed one, it struck me I couldn't be hanged more than once. So I might as well do old Evans, too."
"Thoughtful of you, Mr. Kilroy."
"That butcher was a private matter, though. He kicked a dog once. I saw him. Didn't treat his wife any better. No kids. Figured he'd leave her his money. So I got him with his own mallet. Quite simple, you see."
"And you signed your name to each one?"
"Oh, of course. Good deeds are scarce in this world. Thought I ought to get proper credit each time. Now, if you'll excuse me..."
"Sergeant! Good work, Sergeant."
He's strong, sir. Stronger than he looks.
Cases like this usually are. We'll need the ambulance. Not the wagon this time, and use the telephone directory, Sergeant. I find them quite useful books, when I remember to use them."
"Who'd have thought it, sir? How many of our murderers are considerate enough to sign their killings, sir?"
"Murderers don't sign their work, do they? Unless, of course, their sense of humor is as twisted as their valuation of human life. This killer did autograph his killing. And today those notes can be seen in the usual place for such things, in the Black Museum."
Orson Welles will be back with you in just a moment.
Joe Kilroy was insane, of course, by every normal standard. Insane enough, certainly, to sign his name to 3 murders. And by every normal standard, the gentlemen of Scotland Yard acted correctly within the rules of their profession in tracing every possible motivation, every possible suspect, before they came to the obvious solution. After all, it is logical that when men spend their lives dealing with the deliberately obscured, they can actually fail to notice the openly obvious. Now the notes remain in their usual place in Scotland Yard in the Black Museum. And until we meet again in this same place for another story about the Black Museum, I remain, as always, obediently yours.
Museum, starring Orson Welles, is presented by arrangement with Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Radio Attractions. The program is written by Ara Marion, with original music composed and conducted by Sidney Torch, produced by Harry Allen Towers.
And that was The Black Museum with Orson Welles, a syndicated program that told stories about true crime and true crime history as exhibited in the Black Museum in London, England. Now we're going to go to a fictional character, but one that many of you love. It's the Green Hornet. And this is about the gas pen from 1946.
The Green Hornet! The biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful valet Cato, Britt Reid, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reid in the thrilling adventure, The Gas Pen. The Green Hornet strikes again.
Hard-faced men sat in a compartment of a city-bound express from Washington. The larger, more aggressive-looking of the two did most of the talking.
Now look, Spike, if we pull this job off right, we'll be on easy street.
Yeah. Why'd we have to go all the way to the junction this morning to get on this train and ride back? Could have met it in the city.
Because it was planned that way. That's why we parked our car near the station in the city before we left. All you gotta do is what you're told. I found out you know how to keep your mouth shut when we were doing time together in stir, so I sent for
you. Sure, sure. I'd like to know just what it is I'm getting into, Sartell.
Honest, Spike, I don't know myself yet.
What do you mean you don't know?
Just that. But we'll know before long. I'm expecting the guy to come to this compartment any minute. He's the one we'll be working for.
Who is he?
Some guy from one of the consulates in the city. He's on the way back from Washington, ain't he? There he is now.
Senor Sartell, you're expecting me?
Yeah, sure. Come on in. Sit down, make yourself comfortable, Mr. Bill.
I am known as Pedro Camas.
Camas, huh? This is Spike. He's going to help me.
Good.
Cigarette?
Thank you.
Have a light.
Thanks. I'll come directly to the point.
That's what we're waiting for, ain't it, Spike?
Yeah. What's cooking? I was directed to you by my cousin, Hans Truber. I believe you and Hans were together for some time in...
We were cellmates in the pen for a while. But he was there for being a Nazi. You being a South American, I don't see how you...
How we could be cousins? Well, very simple. I've been in South America for a long time. I have cultivated an accent, you see. But all Nazis have not been stamped out, my friend.
What do you know? Ain't it risky for you?
Sartell, can this man be trusted absolutely?
Sure, Spike's okay. He was a friend of Hans, too. What is the job you want done?
Now, listen carefully. I'm an attaché at a certain consulate in your city. There is a messenger on this train carrying papers from South America to the consulate. And in a small leather pouch. My underground friends must have those papers. You are to get that pouch.
That's going to be a tough job, mister. How are we supposed to get it? You figure that out?
Yes, I have.
How do we do it?
The consulate car, driven by the chauffeur, will meet the train. The car has a crest on the side, so you can easily spot him.
Yeah, but if we stop that car and snatch some papers, we're taking a chance of getting caught later. With two guys to put the finger on it.
The authorities will be looking for someone else, my friend.
What do you mean?
Look here. Here in my pocket, I have masks that will disguise you well.
Hey, they look like Green Hornet masks.
Exactly. Here, too, is a seal. A Hornet seal.
Where'd you get that?
The Hornet left that behind when he trapped Hans 3 years ago. Hans kept it. It is a genuine Hornet seal.
Say, this job's beginning to shape up right.
And it will pay well if you do it right, Sartell.
Okay. How do you want us to work it?
Do you have a car? You left one at the station?
Sure, a good fast one, too.
Good. Follow the consulate car from the station. When you reach a deserted stretch along the highway, you can stop them easily enough.
Yeah, sure.
Here also is a pen containing a small amount of gas. Use it on the chauffeur and leave the seal on the dashboard.
What about the other guy?
The messenger? It's very important, my friend, that he does not live to talk. Be careful. Wear gloves. Use the disguises and work fast. Tomorrow night, I will call for the papers. Remember, you must not fail to get them.
Well, here's a good stretch of road. Not another car inside.
Move up on him now?
Yeah, step on it. We're closing up on him. Give the horn, Spike.
Moving over.
Good. Put alongside and run him into the ditch.
Stop.
Pull in front, stop. That's it. Come on.
Right.
Make it snappy.
Why do you... The Green Hornet.
Yeah, that's right, bud. Here's some gas for you.
No. You cannot stop us like this.
Says you. Do your stuff, Spike.
Okay. Wait!
Select Street, Bedford, Consulate Messenger murdered by Green Hornet. AR lady, diplomatic, couch missing, read all about it. Select Street, Bedford!
The following morning, Britt Reed, young publisher of the Daily Sentinel, was in the city room discussing the murder with Mike Axford, one of his reporters, and with Gunnigan, the city editor.
Find out any more about that murder at police headquarters, Axford?
Nothing new, Reed. The Hornet gassed the chauffeur, killed the messenger, then swiped the pouch full of papers. The spalpeen had the nerve to leave his seal right on the dashboard of the car.
Yeah, sure looks like he wanted everyone to know he did it.
Yes, doesn't it?
Of course, the chauffeur thought it was the Green Hornet before he got gassed. He told Sarge so.
That puts the Hornet right in the middle.
I say it does. The whole country will be hunting for him now.
We'll need a good follow-up story, Axford. Go over to the consulate and try to get an interview with the consul. Maybe you can find out just what was in that missing pouch.
Okay, Reed.
And try to make it back here so we won't be trailing the Clarion with a story that ought to be due for the mall.
Ah, stop beefing, will you, Gunnigan? The Clarion don't have a chance to get the beat when I'm on a story. Be seeing you shortly. So long.
Thank you. Early that afternoon, Britt Reed was busy in his office when his secretary, Lenore Case, entered.
These letters are all ready for your signature, Mr. Reed.
All right, Miss Case. Just leave them on my desk.
Yes, sir.
Well, say, has Axford come back yet, do you know?
No, sir, he hasn't.
He went for an interview about 3 hours ago. He should have returned.
Well, if you mean the interview at the consulate, Axford phoned a story to rewrite a while ago.
Oh, did he?
Yes, but Gunnigan isn't satisfied. Seems that Axford didn't see the consul, and the story doesn't amount to much.
Well, the consul probably isn't giving any interviews. Axford usually gets what he goes after.
I know. Well, it could be that he's just a
lady. Hi, Cassie!
Well, we were just talking about you, Axford.
I suppose the minute me back is turned, that's all you do talk about.
The tale you said, well, wouldn't be very interesting if we couldn't find anything else but you to discuss. What happened at the consulate?
Oh, that. Well, you see, Reed, they said the consul wasn't seeing anyone today, especially reporters.
I was afraid of that.
You took a long time getting back, Michael.
Is that so now? Well, I'll have you know I wasn't wasting the trip. So I asked who I could talk to over there. And after a while, a guy comes in, and attaché he was, and I asked him some questions.
What did he have to say?
Well, Reed, to tell you the truth, the interview wasn't worth going after. But I tell you just what he did say, if you want me to.
Go ahead, tell me.
Well, this guy's name was Camus, Senor Pedro Camus. He took me into his own office just off the front hall and asked me what I wanted. So I commenced to ask questions. First of all, Mr. Camus, we want to know what was in that there pouch that was stole from the murdered messenger.
That, of course, I cannot say. There were papers of great international importance.
Oh, is that so? I guess that Thieving Hornet will sell them for a lot of money, eh?
That may be so, Senor. Needless to say, he went to great lengths to get those papers.
That's right. Killing a man and all.
The chauffeur was fortunate the Hornet used a gas pen on him instead of using his gun.
I guess you mean the gas gun he used to put the chauffeur out.
Perhaps that's as good a name as any. That gas pen is a very ingenious weapon at close quarters.
Yeah, that it is. I suppose you questioned that chauffeur?
No, I leave that to the authorities. I hope your newspaper will stress the great importance of catching that Green Hornet before he has the opportunity to dispose of those papers.
Sure. The Daily Sentinel's out to get that spalpeen's hide. You can bet on that. When do you think I can get to see the consul?
Perhaps he'll see the press tomorrow. He's quite upset about the whole thing, of course.
Oh, of course. Yes. I can see why he would be. Well, sir, I'll be getting along. I'll drop around the morning just in case.
Really didn't get much of anything from that interview, Axford. Say, what sort of a man is this Senor Camus?
Oh, kind of dark and heavy-set, Reed. Talks with an accent, of course. And he's got eyes that look right through you, if you know what I mean. Got big, shaggy eyebrows, too.
Oh, by the way, Axford, what was the effect of the gas on that chauffeur, do you know?
Yeah, Sarge mentioned that, Reed. Said the chauffeur must have got just a slight whiff of the stuff. He wasn't out at all, like most of the people the Hornet gases. He just couldn't see and coughed a lot. But he stayed conscious and hailed a passing car a short time after the Hornet left.
Well, maybe the Hornet used tear gas on him this time.
Could be, Miss Case. Well, where does the chauffeur stay, Axford, do you know?
Sarge says he has a room at the consulate garage.
I see.
He's lucky the Hornet didn't kill him, too.
Yes. Almost looks as though the disguised killer wanted to leave a witness.
Well, that chauffeur's a witness to the fact that it was the Hornet who did it.
I suppose the police will leave a guard with the chauffeur so the Hornet can't get to him.
Nope. Sarge says if the Hornet wanted to kill that guy, he'd have done it then and there instead of just gassing him.
That seems logical, Axford.
Sure. That's the way I look at it, too.
You better go to the city room to see Gunnigan, Axford. He's been waiting for you to come back.
Okay, Casey. See you both later.
Well, I guess Axford's interview was a waste of time, wasn't it?
Oh, I wouldn't say that, Miss Case. Sometimes seemingly insignificant conversations can lead to startling headlines in this business. You never can tell.
It was dusk when Britt Reed left the Sentinel building and went to his apartment where Cato, his faithful Filipino valet, was waiting.
You look serious, like something on mine, perhaps.
Are you kidding? After what happened last night, why shouldn't I be serious, Cato?
Well, I mean you have looked like Green Hornet thinking of plan to turn tables on imposter.
Cato, you're familiar with those gas pens, aren't you? You know, looks like a fountain pen.
Oh, yes, sir. The such pens use small amount of tear gas. I see them advertised in magazines.
I'd like to know for certain that such a pen was used last night by that killer who posed as the Green Hornet.
Also, I'd like to find out if the fact was mentioned that a gas pan was used.
Why do you think it important, Mr. Brick?
Because if a gas pan were used and the fact was not mentioned by the chauffeur, we'll be able to track down that killer before the night's over.
We'll continue our Green Hornet adventure in just a moment. In discussing the consulate killing with Cato, Brick Reed stated there was a possibility of tracking down the killer before the night was over. Cato's interest was immediately aroused.
Well, how do you find out about Gas Pen, Mr. Brick?
The Green Hornet could find out from that chauffeur.
Suppose he not notice which kind of gas weapon killer used.
Even that fact would answer my question, Cato.
Will then Green Hornet go out in Black Beauty tonight?
Yes, right now. Let's go.
Stepping through a secret panel in the rear of a closet in the bedroom, Britt Reed and Cato went along a narrow passageway built within the walls of the apartment itself. This passage led to an adjoining building, which fronted on a dark side street. Though supposedly abandoned, this building served as the hiding place for the sleek, superpowered Black Beauty, streamlined car of the Green Hornet. Britt Reed pressed a button. The great car roared into life. A section of the wall in front raised automatically, then closed as the gleaming Black Beauty sped into the darkness.
Wait here, Cato. I won't be long.
You certain there's no police guard?
Yes, unless they've changed their minds. Keep your eyes open. Be ready for a quick start.
I'll be ready.
Good. I'll be back in a few minutes.
Britt Reed moved like a shadow toward the small garage. Then he went noiselessly up the outside stairway that led to the room above. Reaching the landing at the top, he stood for a moment listening. Then he knocked on the door.
You again? Why do you come here?
To talk to you. But if you try any tricks...
No, don't shoot me. That must be the same gun you used to shoot.
Used to do what?
To kill the messenger last night.
You don't think this gun shoots gas, then, eh?
No, of course not. Last night you used what looked like a pencil or a pen.
So that's what you told the police, eh?
No, I just said I was gassed. I didn't mention what you used. It meant nothing. But that gun, don't use it on me. I can't harm you. Why should you kill me?
I didn't come to kill you, fellow. But a bit of gas will keep you from giving an alarm. Here it is.
No.
Now, Cato and I will really go into action. Better get out of here.
That you, Mr. Britt?
Yes, Cato.
You have success, perhaps?
Yes. Now, I'm sure a certain party is connected with that killing last night.
Well, who you mean?
Senor Comas.
Comas? Were he attaché in consulate?
Yes.
Will you go over to house and force him to take you to killers?
No. From Axford's description, it's not that type one can bluff or force into anything.
Well, what we do now?
His office is just off the hall. I'm going in, locate it, and leave a Hornet seal on his desk. Then we'll wait on the Black Beauty and see what he does.
It was a simple matter for Britt Reed to locate Comas's office just off the hall. And waiting until the coast was clear, he effected an entrance and left a Hornet seal. Then he returned to the Black Beauty to watch and wait. It was almost 20 minutes later when Comas left the conference with the consul and entered his own office.
It will soon be time for me to... A seal. A seal of the Green Hornet. He has been in here. I know exactly what that Hornet expects me to do. I, too, know a lot of tricks.
Hello?
Sartell?
Yeah. Who are you?
Comas. I have just had a visit by the Green Hornet. He left his seal on my desk.
Holy mackerel. He must have found out something. What are you going to do?
Hold on now, my friend. Don't become panicky. I am going to come over there. I'm sure he will be watching and will follow me.
Hey, you crazy? We ain't playing seduction alone.
Wait, Sartre, wait. Listen. I know what I'm doing. I sincerely hope he does follow me there. It will fit in just right with my plans. Now listen closely. I'll tell you how we'll trap this green hornet.
From their vantage point in the Black Beauty, parked in the shadows outside the consulate, Britt and Cato could see the figure of Commerce at his desk using the telephone.
He phoned warning to others, Mr. Britt. He not lead us to them.
So then they had no phone at the hideout, Cato. Guess he is phoning someone about finding that seal.
Well, maybe he called police.
Could be, though I hardly think so.
Well, look, he finished phoning. Put on coat and hat.
Yeah. Maybe I misjudged that man.
What you mean?
Nothing much, Cato. Get ready to follow him when he comes out. His own car must be parked somewhere along the street.
He come out now.
He's going toward a car in the driveway.
There he goes. Get after him, Cato.
Look, you go up alley to back door of old house.
Yes. There's moonlight enough to show the place up for what it is. An old small frame house, probably deserted. So much the better.
What you do now?
Oh, I'm inside, of course. Before I go, Cato, there's some instructions I want to give you. I'll wait outside until you carry them out.
What I have to do?
Listen very carefully, and I'll tell you all the details.
In South, Commerce had been talking to Sartell and Spike.
Commerce, I don't like this. You say you think the hornet followed you here?
That is what I think.
But you've been here for 20 minutes. If he did follow you here, it'd have been...
I say let's get away from you. No. I didn't expect the hornet to move hastily. I still feel that he'll come in. We better get ready for him. Now listen to me. This door leads to the back. That door over there leads to the front of the house. The only window in this room is boarded up, as you see.
What about it?
What are you driving at?
The hornet will come in that back door. I left it unlocked for him. You, Spike, stand against the wall alongside it. Have your gun handy.
Okay.
You, Sartell, get on the other side.
Right. Okay. Now what are you going to do?
I'll stand before the door leading to the front so he cannot go out that way. Anyway, it's locked. He'll see me when he enters, but he will not see you two. Quiet now. We'll trap the hornet. Tie him up. Leave the empty pouch near him. Then phone the police. We'll get away before they come.
Well, I don't like this. I think...
Quiet. The doorknob is turning.
Don't move, Thomas.
I haven't any intention of moving, Hornet.
Lots of nerve, haven't you?
Of course. You're pointing one gun at me. There are two pointing at you from behind.
But hold it, Hornet. A trap, eh?
What do you think, Dope?
Close the door, Spike.
I see you have a gun too, Thomas.
Yes, that makes three guns pointing at you. Rather a droll situation, is it not? Of course, it can be tragic, Senor Hornet.
Okay. Now you make the next move.
It is my pleasure. First, Hornet,
hey,
we're
going... Hey, there's fire near here.
We have no time to go look at fire, Spike.
Thomas, look! Smoke coming up through the floorboard.
Yeah, and under the doors. Hey, this house is on fire. We gotta get out.
Wait, hold on.
The back door, it's locked. From the outside.
The pouch with the papers, where is it?
Under the floor, in that corner.
Oh,
Spike.
I have it. Now we'll...
Like a smart guy?
Spike, Sartell.
They're too busy trying to get out. Take this big shot.
No, that gun. Gas.
Yes, you should have known I used a gas gun.
Gas.
Then you wouldn't have said the wrong thing, Dope.
Oh, we gotta get out.
This'll put you out.
Oh!
I'll get you to last.
The last thing you do is run. Here's another one.
You hurry. I hold door on other side.
Yes, I thought it was bolted outside. Got the extra mask?
It here.
Put on our cameras. Leave the pouch with it. Ah, there. Thing we put those smoke filters on our masks.
I make smudge flares. One in each hall, one in cellar. Call firemen and police.
Yes, and they'll catch us if we don't beat it. Come on.
Thank you. later in the city room at the Daily Sentinel.
Reed, I'm glad you came down to get the news.
Yeah, and what news, Chief? Tell him, Sergeant Burke.
Well, Mr. Reed, we got the killers of that consulate messenger and found the stolen pouch.
That's marvelous, Sergeant. How did you do it?
Oh, just one of those things. The Hornet turned the tables on some killers that used his name.
Yeah. Golly, Reed, we went to a dump on the waterfront. The fire department was there. Somebody called them. But all they found was some pails with greasy rags burning in them to make a lot of smoke.
And when we busted in, we found a guy with a Hornet mask on. Axford liked to went crazy thinking we got the smell paint. But it turned out to be a minor attaché from the consulate, Camus by name. He's really a spy.
Yeah, can you tie that, Reed? Twas the guy I interviewed yesterday. Imagine, me in the room alone with the killer. We got the other two along with him.
Sounds like a two-man police force to hear you and Burke talk.
Primary partner, not a cop. And I just gave you a humdinger of a story, Gunnigan.
Sure, after the cops gave it to you. Camus was an underground Nazi spy after them papers.
How did you find that out, Sergeant?
All three of them squealed all over the place. They used Hornet masks, a seal, and a gas pen when they held up the car for the killing.
A gas pen, you say?
Yeah, ain't that something? Any dope ought to know the Hornet uses a gas gun. But of course, they did get away with it. Almost.
Almost is right, actually.
I'll bet the Green Hornet's saying about the same thing right now. Huh, Mr. Reed?
I wouldn't be surprised, Sergeant. I really wouldn't be surprised.
Popular radio dramas created by George W. Trendle are a copyrighted feature of The Green Hornet, Incorporated. All characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious.
Well, we've had about an hour of crime and excitement, and it's time now to lighten the mood considerably. With a great Gildersleeve. Gildy's being sued this time, and it's because of his problem with women. I imagine he's once again gotten engaged to two girls at the same time, something like that. We'll find out, though, as we listen to Gildy Is Sued from 1945, and it starts right now.
The Great Gildersleeve. A special rebroadcast for all you soldiers, sailors, and Marines of the United Nations. Listen to another amazing episode in the life of the Great Gildersleeve. Now let's join the Great Gildersleeve. He's already tried three times to get his old friend Judge Hooker on the telephone.
Hello, Judge. About time you got up. Listen, get over here right away, will you? I'll tell you what it's about when you get here. I'll tell you what it's about when you get here. I'll tell you what it's about when you get... Dolores Del Rey is suing me for breach of promise. Well, all right.
Oh, so that's what he thinks. Oh, Uncle Mort, is she really going to sue you after all?
Well, I'm afraid so, children. She realizes that a public trial will probably ruin my career, and she's using it to shake some money out of me.
Are there really women like that? I'll say.
You know nothing about it. I'll thank you to remember that. If you hear anybody discussing this case, you too, Marjorie.
Okay.
Whatever we know about this, we'll keep in our little family. Understand?
Yes, sir.
Now get out of here so I can be alone with Judge Hooker.
You mean go skating?
No, I mean go write your letters. There's the judge. Listen, Hooker, take a look at this.
What is it?
The fella handed to me last night.
Let me just get my glasses on here.
Oh, take your time, Judge. There's just a man's good name and reputation at stake, that's all.
Now, let's see. What have we here?
Yeah? Yeah. Willfully and with intent to deceive. All seems in good order.
Well?
Guilty, do you know what this means?
No, Judge, what?
You're being sued.
Ye gods, I don't need a lawyer to tell me that, Judge. What am I going to do about it? That's what I want
to
know.
Well, in the first place, you have to file an answer.
Look, Judge, you told me yourself only 1 week ago that the woman has no case. How about that?
Well, that was my personal opinion, Guilty. I merely gave it to you for what it was worth.
Well, for what it's worth, you can have it back.
Furthermore, I was evidently not in possession of all of the facts at the time. If the charges here are true.
Oh? What do you mean?
Is it true, as it says here, that you and the plaintiff discussed the question of marriage?
Well, I told her she ought to get married, but...
Answer yes or no.
Yes. But I was proposing she should marry you, and you know that.
Maybe I do and maybe I don't. Is it true that following the aforementioned discussion of marriage, you kissed the plaintiff?
None of your business.
Now, Guilty, I'm your lawyer, and I have to know.
Well, I never would have kissed her if I'd known she was going to be a plaintiff.
But you did kiss her.
Well, when a lady throws her arms around you and hollers, "Kiss me," what are you going to do? You got to be polite.
That's bad. You propose to the lady she should marry someone else, and then you seal it with a kiss. It'll never stand up in court.
Well, that's what happened. What am I going to do, Horace?
Well, we'd better get hold of her lawyer, Waldo Barker.
Waldo Barker? What kind of a lawyer is he?
Well, they call him Weeping Waldo. Good man in front of a jury. I'll call him in the morning.
You call him right now.
But, Guilty...
You get a hold of him, tell him we'll be right over there.
Counselor, I'd like to have you meet my client, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Gildersleeve, eh? Well, I've heard a lot about you, Mr. Gildersleeve. Yes, sir, heard a lot. It's a pleasure to meet you.
I wish I could say the same.
Well, it's some time since I've had the pleasure of opposing you in court, Judge.
Yes, too.
You lawyers, thicker than thieves.
Last time was in the Anthony case, as I remember. It involved a dog.
Yes, yes. One of the best witnesses I ever had. Said nothing and did as he was told. I won that case, as I remember.
Miscarriage of justice.
And then we opposed each other again in Fadkin versus Summerfield Light and Power, remember? Manhole cover.
I'll never forget it.
I won that case, too, if you recall.
Another miscarriage.
Judge, didn't you ever win the case? Look, gentlemen, I don't like to interrupt your chummy reminiscences, but we've got a lawsuit here, remember?
Now, Guilty, all in good time.
The law has many fascinating angles, Mr. Gildersleeve, and one of the most fascinating is breach of promise. You recall the case of Bohack versus Gaines, Judge?
No, I can't say that I do. I'm not up on breach of promise.
Oh, fine.
The point at issue there was whether a cider jug thrown in the heat of argument but without intent to maim or kill constitutes an appropriate termination of contract to marry. I don't need to remind you that the woman won.
I might point out, however, Counselor, that the facts are a little different in this case.
Oh, I quite agree. I merely mentioned it because it was interesting. No. This is an open and shut case, if I ever saw one.
Hey!
Now, that we're not prepared to admit.
In fact, the whole thing is nothing but a frame-up, Counselor, and you know it.
Oh, now, Guilty...
Now, Commissioner, let's not get excited. I understand your feelings. You're a man of some reputation in this town, and a thing like this can be very embarrassing. It might even cost you your career, not to mention the cost of defending a long, drawn-out suit in court. But it doesn't need to get to court.
Oh? What do you mean?
Well, if they're handled in the proper way, these things can be settled out of court.
How much?
Well, I haven't consulted my client, but I would imagine that a settlement of $5,000...
$5,000?
Well, you're getting off cheap.
I think you ought to consider it, Guilty.
Listen, you old goat. What did I hire you for? You're supposed to be my lawyer.
And as your lawyer, I advise you to settle the case.
Very sound, Judge.
You lawyers make me sick. Always getting together to cut up somebody else's money.
I take it, then, that you don't intend to settle.
Settle? I'll fight this case to the finish. I'll fight it all the way to the Supreme Court and back. I'll fight this case if I have to handle it myself.
The Great Gildersleeve will be with us again in just a few seconds. Now let's get back to poor old Gildersleeve. He spent the afternoon in the public library, reading the law on breach of promise and studying the rules of court procedure until he's completely confused on both of those subjects. A supper of fried oysters, baked beans, and dill pickles lies none too comfortably on his stomach as we find him now fitfully dozing on the couch in his parlor. dozing and dreaming.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh yes, oh yes, oh yes. The Superior Court, Summerfield, is now in session. Let all transgressors be brought to the bar of justice to pay the penalty demanded by the law. And here is your judge for this afternoon's trial. That celebrated star of bar and bench, Carl W. Hofstetter.
Thank you, Clerk of the Superior Court, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. First case?
Delray versus Gildersleeve.
Is the court stenographer ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Plaintiff's counsel ready?
Yes, Your Honor.
Defendant's counsel ready?
I'm handling my own case, Your Honor.
You are?
I object!
Objection overruled. The court will now hear the opening statement for the plaintiff. Mr. Barker.
Your Honor, and my very good friends, the jury, this is an action in breach of promise instituted in behalf of the plaintiff, Miss Dolores Del Rey, whom you see sitting there before you. And by the way, did anyone ever look lovelier? Lovely, lovely. I shall prove to you before this trial is over that this little flower, this tender blossom, who sits here bathed in the dew of her tears, has been the victim of this designing monster.
Ooh! I object!
Objection overruled. Proceed.
As my first witness, it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you at this time the little lady herself, Miss Dolores Del Rey.
Oh, thank you so much.
Gentlemen of the jury, Miss Del Rey.
Oh, I love you all.
And now, Miss Del Rey, I'd like to have you meet Judge Hofstetter.
Ah, I am charmed. You know, I think I meet you someplace before, Judge, no?
Ooh, could be. You don't happen to know Kitty McClure, do you?
Oh, but she's one of my best friends.
Well, what do you know? Say, what are you doing after?
I object!
What? Oh, objection sustained. The court is out of order.
You're telling me.
Attorney for the prosecution will continue with the witness.
Miss Del Rey, we know how painful all this must be to you, but I'm going to ask you to try to recall for the jury. Is it not true that this man here, Mr. Gildersleeve, was at one time very dear to you?
Oh, please.
You see, gentlemen, simple and trusting. She came to him wide-eyed like a child. To him, it was just another conquest. But to her, it was the flowering of true love. Ah, love. What a world of tender meaning lies within that one word, love. Poets have written whole poems about it. Men have died for it. And this poor child, you see what it has done to her.
Has the clerk got a handkerchief?
Handkerchief for his honor.
Thanks. Proceed.
Miss Del Rey, I am going to ask you only one question. Is it not true that Mr. Gildersleeve, on various occasions, made to you protestations of undying affection? Is it not true that he begged you to marry him? Is it not true that he subsequently spurned you in a cruel and unusual manner?
Oh, please!
Her tears are your answer, gentlemen. I rest my case.
Help the lady down from the stand there, somebody. Not everybody! Jury, stay in your box. Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, have you any defense?
I certainly have, Your Honor. I should like to introduce first the testimony of an old and trusted servant who's been in my employ for many years, Miss Bertie Lee Coggins. Bertie?
I'm coming.
Yeah. Just climb right up there, Bertie. Yeah, that's it. Now, will you tell these people what kind of an employer I've been, Bertie?
Mr. Gillsleeve is a fine man.
Yeah, that's it. Tell him some more.
He's a fine man, that's all.
May I ask the witness a question?
Oh, certainly. Go right ahead.
Did you ever see Mr. Gildersleeve in a tete-a-tete with Miss Del Rey?
Mr. Gildersleeve is a fine man.
Answer the question.
He's a fine man.
If it please the court, the witness refuses to answer the questions put to her.
Answer the gentleman's question. Did you ever find them embracing?
I still say he's a fine man.
You want to be cited for contempt of court?
I ain't talking about the court. I'm talking about Mr. Gildersleeve, and he's a fine man.
The witness has obviously been coached.
That's a lie.
Next witness?
Yes, Your Honor. My next witness, ladies and gentlemen, is well known to Summerfield. Miss Eve Goodwin, principal of our local grammar school. Tell him the kind of fellow I am, Eve.
All right, Throckmorton. Your Honor, Mr. Gildersleeve is a very high-minded man, devoted to the public welfare. He's shown his loyalty to the community by his long service as water commissioner and as a member of the school board. I've always known him to be honest, upright, kind, and good.
Yeah. There. Tie that, Mr. Barker.
Is that all you want from this witness?
Well, who could ask for anything more?
You want a cross-question, Mr. Barker?
Just two questions, Your Honor. Miss Goodwin, were you ever engaged to marry Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes, I was.
Did he marry you?
No, he didn't.
That's all.
I object! This wasn't the same kind of a situation.
Objection overruled. Have you any more witnesses, Mr. Gildersleeve?
Yes. I'd like to call on an old friend and neighbor to say a few words at this time. Mrs. Leela Ransom. You'll step up to the witness stand, please, Leela.
Must I smile at the jury, Throckmorton?
I'm afraid you'll have to do more than that.
Leave it to me. Well, good morning, Judge. Tell me, are you related to any of the Virginia Hofstetters by any chance?
Nope.
Oh.
Proceed with the case.
Mrs. Ransom, how long have you known me?
Well, let me see, Throckmorton. It must be about 2.5 years. I remember because that was the fall Cousin Ellie had a baby. He's the same age as Cindy Lou's child, and Cindy Lou's child is 2.5.
Great. You've known me 2.5 years.
Yes.
In all that time, have you ever known me to do a dishonorable thing?
Gracious, I should say not. Why, Throckmorton is the soul of honor. It's ridiculous, all the things they're saying about him here. Throckmorton wouldn't hurt a fly. He may go around kissing everybody, but he doesn't mean anything by it.
Will the witness please address the jury?
The jury? Oh, hello there. Nice y'all could come.
This is, I give up. Your witness, Barker.
Mrs. Ransom, were you ever engaged to marry Mr. Gildersleeve?
Why, yes, I was.
Did he marry you?
No, he didn't, but
That's all.
No, I object!
Objection overruled.
But, Your Honor,
you can see this man has no witnesses. All he has is a long record of breach of promise.
That's not true. Peavy, come up here.
Well, Mr. Gildersleeve, what can I do for you this afternoon?
Peavy, just get up there on the witness stand and tell the truth, will you, Peavy? Now, you're a druggist here in Summerfield, are you not?
A pharmacist, Mr. Gildersleeve.
All right, then, a pharmacist. I come into your store quite frequently, do I not?
Well...
Objection, defendant is leading the witness.
Sustained. You can't put words in the witness mouth, Mr. Gildersleeve. Just ask him questions.
Oh, sorry, Judge. I'm a little new at this. Well, Peavy, am I a customer of yours?
Yes, you are, Mr. Gildersleeve.
Fine. Now, how often do I come into your store? Is that all right, Your Honor?
Yes, that's all right. How often does he come into your store, Peavy?
Well, now, that's a question. He was in yesterday.
Yes, but how often do I come in?
Hard to say.
Would you say he comes in once a month?
Well, some months he does.
Would you say I come in once a week?
Some weeks, yes.
Does he ever come in more than once a day?
Some days, yes.
Well, confound it. Then he comes into your store quite frequently, doesn't he?
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
Let it go, Peavy. Now, look, do you remember my talking to you about Miss Del Rey?
Yes, I believe I do.
Great. Did you ever hear me say anything about marrying her?
Marrying her?
Yeah.
Marrying her?
Yes.
Not that I remember.
All right. In your opinion, he's nothing but a woman chaser.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
By George, Peavy. As a matter of fact, I'm indifferent to women, am I not?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Peavy, you're the world's worst witness.
Well, no, I wouldn't say that.
I give up. Your witness, Barker.
I pass.
Well, any more witnesses for the defense?
I guess not, Your Honor. I guess I'm through.
Is that all? Well, you've got no case whatsoever, Gildersleeve.
But, Your Honor, I never thought of marrying this woman. Nobody has proved I asked her to marry me.
Your Honor, may I recall Miss Del Rey to the stand?
Go ahead.
Miss Del Rey, you say Mr. Gildersleeve asked you to marry him.
Oh, yes, he certainly did.
Do you recall the words in which he proposed to you?
Yes, I recall them very well.
Would you mind repeating them, please?
No, not at all.
Exactly as he said them.
Yes, sir. Besame. Besame mucho.
I object. That's nothing but a song.
I intend to show Your Honor that Defendant Gildersleeve offered marriage to my client in the course of the song.
Mr. Gildersleeve, did you sing this song to Miss Del Rey?
Well, yes.
Then you'll hold your peace until she's had her say. Proceed, Miss Del Rey.
Oh, thank you, Judge. You're so kind.
Proceed.
Besame.
That means kiss me. It's Spanish. Proceed.
Besame mucho.
That means kiss me plenty.
It does not.
Proceed.
Each time I cling to your kiss, I hear music divine.
Well, now I ask you, if the defendant said that...
It's just a song.
Quiet. This is a musical treat the court seldom enjoys.
Besame mucho.
Kiss me.
You too.
Yeah.
Hold me, my darling, and say that you'll always be mine.
I don't like to interrupt the court's pleasure, but I wish to call particular attention to that last phrase. Hold me, my darling, and say that you'll always be mine. There's the whole thing in a nutshell.
Let the lady sing.
This joy is something new. My arms enfolding you. Never knew this thrill before. Whoever thought I'd be holding you close to me, whispering it's you I adore.
Beautiful. Lovely.
And they call this justice.
Dearest one, if you should leave me, all of my dreams would take wing and my life would be through.
I call the court's attention to...
Shut up!
Besame mucho. Love me forever. And make all my dreams come true.
Ah, thank you, Miss Del Rey. Well, I don't know how you fellows feel about it in the jury, but that's enough for me.
What?
How about it, boys? Have you reached the verdict?
Wait!
Well, what is it you wish to say, you fiend in human form?
I want a lawyer!
Sorry, you've had your chance. All right, gentlemen, you may give your verdict.
No! No!
Mr. Gildersleeve, wake up, Mr. Gildersleeve!
What's it for?
Oh, Mr. Gildersleeve, you must have fell asleep. The judge is here.
What judge?
Judge Hooker. Who do you think?
Hooker, don't let him go, Bertie. Tell him to wait. Tell him I want to see him.
I'm not going, Gildy. Thank you, Bertie.
You're welcome.
Oh, Judge, am I ever glad to see you. That case. Listen.
That's just what I dropped in to talk to you about.
I've just been through it. I mean, I had a dream. I mean, something tells me... Never mind. We've got to settle it, Judge. Do anything but settle it.
But you can't settle it now, Gildy. He'll double the ante. He'll make it 10,000 instead of 5. No, Gildy. We'll do it your way.
What do you mean?
I'm going to fight.
That's the stuff.
Yes, by golly, they can't scare me. I'll carry this case all the way to the Supreme Court. I'll fight this thing through to the finish if it takes every cent you've got.
Well, still, that's less than $5,000.
Gildy, I just had a better idea. This way it won't cost you a cent.
Oh, what is it, Horace?
Why don't you marry the girl?
Why not? I better sleep on it. Good night, everybody.
Well, it's time for us to go away for another week, and we'll be back in a week with more great old-time radio. Another reminder for you, be sure to listen to the Radio Theater channel. It has old-time radio 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Until next week, though, this is Jim Dolan saying,